The Oak Ridge Symphony and Chorus are presenting a concert this Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Oak Ridge High School Performing Arts Center. The theme is Magnificent March, and on the program will be two selections from Verdi's four sacred pieces, the Symphony No. 9 by Shostakovich and the final movement from Gorecki's Symphony No. 3, which will feature soprano Katie Wolfson. And here to talk with me today about this concert is Dan Olcott, conductor and music director of the Oak Ridge Symphony. Welcome back, Dan.
It's great to be here again.
Let's talk a little bit about these pieces. We'll start with the Verdi from his four sacred songs. You're performing both the Te Deum and the Stabat Mater. When we think of Verdi, most of us immediately think of him as an opera composer, but these are obviously sacred choral works.
Right. I mean, Verdi, first of all, what a great guy. Verdi was one of those guys from kind of a small town who came out, he applied to the Milan Conservatory, they said no, and now he's, you know, the most performed opera composer in the world. He just had a great kind of workmanship about his life. He just kept working and kept working. He wrote, I think, 30 operas or something like that, of which we know about 8, you know, but we all consider that, you know, you kind of look back and think, oh, Verdi's great. I'm sure everything was great for him. He just worked hard. Towards the end of his life, he became a little more thoughtful about what his religion meant to him. And these two works are a very personal look at two very kind of standard texts.
Tell us a little bit about Gorecki's Symphony No. 3. This is a symphony in three movements?
Yes, the Symphony of Sorrowful Songs, from which we will perform the third movement, was a huge hit in the 90s. Actually, Don Upshaw made a recording of it, and it was a million seller and a very popular CD. And I heard it, and as I was talking to you before, I was actually working in public radio at that time while I was a graduate student. And so I knew of the recording and had listened to it. And it's a singular work that became popular of Gorecki's. Gorecki is a composer from the Silesia area of southwest Poland. And, you know, not from the big city. He's from Katowice. He taught at the Silesian State Academy for a while. And the work became very popular. It's a work of minimalism, basically. And he collected three texts. It's for soprano and orchestra. And he collected texts that he found very deep and moving. And they look at sorrow from a mother's point of view, as is the Stabat Mater in the Verdi. And that's kind of how these things started coming together. And I was looking for a vehicle to feature my friend Katie Wolfson, because many people know that Katie, she's well known in Knoxville and Oak Ridge area. She has a great dramatic singing voice. She sings a lot of music theater. She acts, really a wonderful stage presence. But she has a beautiful and big voice that not everybody's familiar with that aspect of her. And so when I talked to her about the possibility of doing this and I gave her a score and we listened to some recordings, she was just really taken with the dramatic aspects of this text, the third movement of which is a text for a mother looking for her son who's probably been lost in battle. And she even quotes the Virgin Mary from the same context of the Stabat Mater. And so there's a kind of connectedness to that. Later on, after I kind of knew of the recordings, I actually was in Katowice, Poland, which is where Gorecki is from. And I actually picked up the score that I have with me today in a music store there in Katowice. I was in a conducting competition that was hosted by the radio orchestra in that part of Poland. And in fact, we were hanging out in a cafe, all the conductors, all the English-speaking conductors hung out in one specific cafe where we knew some of the waiters spoke English. Because this was in 98, this is only in the first decade after the wall came down. It was kind of a fun time in Poland. And everybody who was there said, yeah, you know, Gorecki comes here sometimes and gets coffee. And so we're all looking every day to see, is Gorecki sitting at the corner table somewhere? We never saw him. He's a kind of a shy guy. He died in 2010, and a lot of people would ask him, you know, are you trying to reclaim the status of the Third Symphony? And he says, I don't seek my audience. I've moved on. I write things, and if people listen, that's great. If they don't like it, he goes, there are things I don't like either.
Why do you think it became so hugely popular?
Well, Gorecki said that there was something in it that obviously people were missing. And so when the recording came along and became so popular, he said obviously something, he had written something that at the time people were not missing. And then as times changed, people kind of came to it. And boy, that's not an common story in classical music. There are a lot of pieces of music that have been written and not touched and then have come to the surface. If you think of the Brandenburg concertos or Schubert's great C major symphony, things like that, that really came to the fore long after they were written.
Because it was actually about 15-year-old
piece, yeah. And it had been played a little bit, but, you know, just not really. Obviously, it had its great fame in the mid-90s and just really soared.
Is the text of this work sung in Polish?
Yes, it is in Polish. And obviously, for the Verdi works and for the Górecki, we have the text in the program because they're dramatic works and people need to be able to follow along. And the Górecki is a very static, harmonically static piece. And so the text is even that much more important.
Shostakovich's Ninth Symphony has an interesting history as well. He originally began composing it in 1943, which was during World War II, but then stopped working on it and didn't resume it until 1945. I read completing it just 3 days before the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
And when he returned to it, he had a completely different take on what he wanted it to sound like and what he wanted to convey. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because he started off with this kind of grand idea of a symphony that was going to talk about the great courage and victory of the Soviet peoples, and it was planned for chorus and orchestra and soloists. And then when he came back to it, he says, "Nah, I'm not going to do that." And it actually sounds like more like Haydn than anything else. There's a lot of, which is not that unusual because Haydn also had a pretty good sense of humor and irony. This piece ended up being a very neoclassical piece. The middle movements are less so. There's some very beautiful kind of choral and vocal sounding music for clarinets and brass, but the outer movements really have that kind of fun. It's very rhythmically energetic and it's very wry. And of course, if you're tapping your foot and thinking it's a Haydn symphony, every once in a while your foot gets caught because there are extra beats and measures. But it's really a fun piece. And, you know, Shostakovich had this challenge that the interpretation of his works from the critics and the government constantly changed. And so when it came out, they thought, oh, this is a great, you know, light, buoyant celebration of the great Soviet victory. And then 3 years later, it was banned. So there you go.
I mean, why there seems to be some confusion about what Shostakovich was actually trying to say with this work.
About everything Shostakovich ever intended to say. Sorry to interrupt, but you know this. This is the case. If you look at, you know, there's this biography that came out called Testament that then 10 years later, everybody said, that's total, you know, baloney. That's not the truth. Shostakovich would change what he said about things. He wrote one tempo marking for the end of the Fifth Symphony, which was his big, you know, resurrection of his reputation symphony. Very slow, plodding tempo, which I actually like. And then Bernstein recorded it with a really fast tempo, which makes the piece sound, you know, kind of a little flip to me. And Shostakovich said, oh, I love that recording. You know, you can't really tell what he thinks because he got in trouble anytime he said anything that could be seen as black and white. I think the only real testament is the music. And so for me, there's a little bit of both. Certainly there's a kind of bubbling virtuosity and joy of music making in this piece, but there's also a lot of wit and a little bit of irony. So I think that was what led to the condemnation, is that the irony kind of became too pronounced, and that changed with the times. People's perception of the music changed, and that's what always endangered Shostakovich, because one day he was the hero and the next day he was banned.
One thing that stands out to me is the difference between the political climates during which Shostakovich and Górecki were composing. Following the war, Polish composers enjoyed great compositional freedom, whereas Russian composers were highly censored. Why this difference between the two cultures?
Well, you have to make the comparison between, it's really about post-Stalinist composers. And in the Soviet Union, there was still a lot of fear, who comes next? You know, whereas I think in Poland, they felt a sense of freedom, that yes, there was still an Eastern Bloc, but there was a sense of freedom. And in their compositional styles, Górecki, actually, they became very progressive. Górecki was composing in 12-tone style, and they were doing a lot of very adventuresome things. And in fact, when his style kind of became more conservative, he was condemned by fellow composers. But he was very politically active at that time. He was actually the provost of the Academy in Katowice, which meant he wasn't composing as much. And he kind of, at the same time, this was the time when John Paul II was starting to have an influence, and then eventually Solidarity had an influence. And so there was a certain freedom. And in that freedom, he chose to be actually a little bit more conservative. He had gone, you know, the pendulum had swung one direction and then he came back. Whereas I think in the Soviet Union, there was still that sense of impending fear. Who's going to be next? What's Khrushchev going to do? What can we do? What can we get away with and can we not get away with? And also, I think it's a little bit time of life that Gorecki is a composer from a next generation from Shostakovich. If you look at Prokofiev, Shostakovich, and then maybe Gorecki and Ludoslavsky and people like that, you have these three different generations that have kind of teetered within this kind of era of a little bit of a police state. Prokofiev was the first. He was confused. He came back to Russia from Paris because he wanted to be a Soviet composer. They condemned him. Shostakovich was, you know, a hero. They condemned him. And then you have these satellite composers from Poland and stuff who, at the end of the Stalinist era, really branched out and kind of went for it.
I've been speaking with Dan Alcott, conductor and music director of the Oak Ridge Symphony, about their concert taking place this Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. Once again, the concert will be held in the Oak Ridge High School Performing Arts Center, and they are performing works by Verdi, Shostakovich, and Henrik Gorecki. More information is available online at orcma.org or by phone at 483-5569.